Don't Move a Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter re-long podcast. Your hosts for this podcast are me, Cassie.
And me, Joe.
And this week we are going to be talking about Chapter 5, Diagon Alley. This episode is going up a little late because of who we are as people.
Yes, we are recording this on the Tuesday after it should have been out.
Well, you don't need to say that. And yeah, let's get into the chapter discussion.
Well, it's my turn to do the chapter summary.
Yes, it is.
So here we go. So Harry Potter wakes up on his birthday and keeps his eyes closed, convinced that last night was a dream.
This is so detailed already.
I don't think so.
Okay, go on.
So Harry wakes up on his birthday and keeps his eyes closed, convinced last night was a dream. He finally opens his eyes because he thinks Petunia's knocking on the door, but realizes it wasn't a dream and that an owl delivering a newspaper was tapping on his window. He pays the owl with wizarding money, and him and Hagrid take the Dursleys' boat and then a train to London. Hagrid leads Harry into a dingy pub called the Leaky Cauldron, where everyone shakes his hand for like 10 minutes. Then Hagrid turns a brick wall into an archway, and they find themselves in Diagon Alley. First stop is Gringotts, a wizard bank run by goblins. Harry takes the money left by his parents, and Hagrid picks up a small package in Vault 713 for Dumbledore. Next, Harry goes into Madame Malkin's alone for robes. He meets a boy also going to Hogwarts for his first year. The boy talks about things that Harry doesn't know about yet, like Quidditch and schoolhouses. He says he'll be in
Slytherin.
And racism. But I'm getting to that. So the boy talks about Quidditch and schoolhouses. He says he'll be in Slytherin and calls Hagrid a servant and then makes fun of him. Harry defends him. After hearing that both Harry's parents are wizards, the boy says the other sort shouldn't be let into Hogwarts. Harry rejoins with Hagrid, where he learns Quidditch is a wizard sport and Slytherin is an evil schoolhouse. They shop for the rest of the school supplies. Hagrid buys Harry a snowy owl for his birthday, and then they go into Ollivander's to buy a wand. Ollivander remembers every wand he sold, including Harry's parents, and says the wand chooses the wizard. After trying a ton of wands, Harry finally gets one that chooses him, and red and gold sparks fly out. Ollivander tells him his wand is the brother of Voldemort's wand. And then Harry takes a train back to stay with the Dursleys.
That was a lot of detail. A lot did happen in this chapter, yeah. In fairness.
I think I focused on just the important stuff. I definitely skipped
you
over
gave
enough.
A lot of details.
Okay.
It's a summary. But yeah, that kind of gets us where we need to go to talk about the chapter more in depth now. And let's start at the beginning. So when the owl delivers the daily profit, it wants to be paid because you have to pay for your newspaper, I guess. And yeah. So it starts attacking Hagrid's coat. I found it really funny because Harry says, "Don't do that."
Yeah, to this owl. I mean, it knows to collect money and to deliver a newspaper. Maybe it understands
just
English.
Just like the state. I don't know. It wasn't like Harry shouted, "Don't do that." You know, it was just like, "Don't do that." Yeah, was funny to me. But yeah, the owl delivers the daily profit and then they eat like cold sausages together.
Yeah, I like this whole time Hagrid's just like asleep on the couch and you just remember, pay the owl.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness, Hagrid had like a journey to get there, so he deserves some sleep. He showed up at midnight the night before, too.
Yeah.
And to be woken up by the owl delivering the paper, I imagine it's kind of early in the morning. Hagrid says a pretty important line here, too. He says that Gringotts is the safest place in the world, except for maybe Hogwarts, which definitely becomes important in this book. And I guess
Throughout the series,
in the future
really.
Of the series. So like Joe said, Gringotts is the wizarding bank. And to give a little bit of background on the word Gringotts, we are going to turn to the Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter. So the etymology kind of the word Gringotts, it comes from the French word gringou. I'm saying that right. We do have a French listener now, and he said that our pronunciation so far has been pretty good, which is a compliment.
But I think we've tried to pronounce like two words so far.
Yeah, it's been two words. So so let's hope we're three for three now. But it comes from the French word grigou, which means a skinflint or a miser. So kind of like a very frugal person, but in a bad way.
Okay.
And then ingot, which is a nugget of precious metals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I knew that.
Yeah, ingot is. I honestly recognize it from Final Fantasy 14 because you can make metal. I don't remember actually how that works. I had to stop playing that game because I ran out of money. But in the real world. So Gringotts is the Wizarding Bank and it is run by the goblins. And yeah, I thought that was some cool background on the word.
He also mentions that it's the only bank for wizards. And like,
which... That's,
for all of wizards?
I mean, probably just for England, because the wizarding world kind of opens up later on in the series, and we learn that there are other wizarding schools and everything out there. But, you know, you have the Ministry of Magic, which only rules over England, I believe, like the wizarding community in England. So I guess it could make sense that there's only one bank for all the wizards in England.
I mean, it would make sense for all the wizards in England.
Yeah.
But he just says it's the only Wizarding Bank?
Yeah, I don't know. That's the thing. I think early on in the series, Rowling didn't have an idea of just how big this wizarding world was. And I guess you could argue that, like, okay, as the series went on, she kind of needed to expand it. And so, you know, she went back and added this whole thing about, you know, oh, the wizards in America for Fantastic Beasts and that kind of thing. But as far as we know, yeah, I guess Gringotts is the only wizarding bank.
It's definitely the only one that's mentioned as far as I know.
I can't imagine that, you know, people are flying in from America every time they need to take some money out of their bank account.
I mean, there's Apparition, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, these so wizards maybe, aren't maybe. Getting on planes to... deposit their gold.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's true. All right. We'll have to look that up, actually. That's interesting.
But speaking of magically traveling...
Well, speaking of flying, in particular, Harry asks Hagrid how he got to the island, because they walk outside of the little hut and they see the boat that the Dursleys came over in, and Hagrid says that he flew there.
But on what?
Exactly, because they establish later on in the series that Hagrid is too big to fly on a broomstick. So I'm not really sure how Hagrid got there. And even more troubling is they take the boat.
Yeah, they take the Dursleys' boat and just like strand them on that island.
Yeah, and the Dursleys will show up in future chapters. Like they don't die there or anything. So like my question is, how do the Dursleys get back? And this is pre-cell phones too.
Yeah, we'll just never know.
Yeah, that's one of the mysteries of Harry Potter.
I like that they take the boat because Hagrid says, oh, I can't use magic now that I have you, and then uses magic right away.
Yes, yeah, they're like sitting in the boat and he's like, it's a shame to row. Which I think speaks to the attitudes of the wizarding world, that like Hagrid and Harry talk about this division between the muggle world and the magical world, and Harry's like, well, why do you need to be kept secret? And Hagrid's like, oh, well, you know, all the muggles would want magic solutions to their answers and to their problems and everything, and yet Hagrid is too lazy to row the boat, so he uses magic. Like, it's just such a hypocritical statement.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of clear further throughout the series that the wizards do rely heavily on their magic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Harry and Hagrid leave the island and start going through England to get to Diagon Alley, which is in London. And they note sort of the reactions to Hagrid in the street, which isn't helped by the fact that Hagrid goes around pointing out perfectly ordinary things like parking meters and saying, see that, Harry? Things these muggles dream up, eh? Which is so funny. He's like an alien in this world. Like, forget that he's the size of like four or five people put together, but oh, that would be so funny to watch. And I think this kind of starts a trend too that we see with a character who's introduced in Chamber of Secrets, of wizards who are amused by muggles and muggle technology.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, Joe mentioned the boy that Harry runs into in the in Madame Malkin's. And so there's this already this division between people who are kind of humored by muggles and who are willing to some extent to coexist with them, like Hagrid, and then people that are just like, I don't want anything to do with muggles, like if you're even related to a muggle, get out of my face.
Yeah, absolutely. We're definitely going to see more of that. And we'll meet some powerful characters that really go against that idea.
Yes. Yeah. And I just think it's interesting that already we're kind of setting up this key conflict for the series. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of adding to the weirdness of traveling around with Hagrid. It says on the train that Hagrid took up two seats and sat knitting what looked like a canary yellow circus tent.
Which I'm guessing would just like a giant yellow blanket.
Maybe.
But what was he going to do with that?
I don't know. I don't know what that ultimately ended up being. But this did make me want to look into the inspiration for the character of Hagrid, which I had an idea about. But here's the official statement from Robbie Coltrane, who played Hagrid in the Harry Potter movies. So he says that Rowling's inspiration for Hagrid was the character was based on a Hell's Angel that she knew in the West Country, who was huge and terrifying. But this man would sit down and talk about his garden and how his petunias had been very bad this year. Which is just spot on Hagrid.
Yeah, and that's perfect to go along with his pink umbrella.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure that there were some intentional parallels drawn there. Yeah, I do wonder about what Hagrid was knitting, though.
I don't think we'll ever know.
Yeah, that's another mystery that we're going to have to track across the series. Oh, and just to kind of go back to what Joe mentioned in his summary, that Harry wonders if it's all been a dream. And then later he says, like, what if this is a joke that the Dursleys are playing on me? Just like as a passing thought, which I thought was so sad because, you know, we've established pretty well in these past few chapters how horrible Harry's life is. And then finally something good happens to this kid, or something that's maybe good. I mean, he is being whisked away by a large man, but something good happens to this kid. And he's like, this must be a joke. This isn't real.
Yeah. And like he's saying, they're cruel enough that the only thing stopping them from doing this to him would be that they don't like jokes.
Yeah. And I thought it was sweet, though, that he kind of ends that thought with that he can't help but trust Hagrid, which I love that Harry Hagrid relationship so much.
I'm not sure exactly where in the chapter is pretty early on, but like Hagrid is telling him about all the stuff that Dumbledore has him do. He's like, fetching you.
He's like, I'm pretty important.
And I just thought it was so cute. He was so happy to be like useful.
Yeah, even though he's kind of doing like delivery tasks, important ones nonetheless, like delivering Harry and this mysterious item that he pulls out of the vault. But yeah, it's cute that he gets such pride out of being Dumbledore's errand boy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I liked so they go into the Leaky Cauldron and we get a description of Tom, mm-hmm. who is described as a toothless walnut, which obviously is much different from your typical toothed walnut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It bothered me a little bit in the movies that they have like this normal looking guy playing Tom in the first movie. Mm-hmm. And then in, you don't see him in Chamber of Secrets, but in Prisoner of Azkaban, he is like Igor from Frankenstein.
I thought he had like an assistant.
I thought they called him Tom at one point.
Maybe.
I don't know. It's actually been a while since I watched Prisoner of Azkaban, the movie.
It hasn't been long enough for me to actually forget.
Yeah, so they're in the Leaky Cauldron and everybody's freaking out because it's Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm. He shakes a lot of hands.
Yeah. Does it seem weird several times that the way to get into Diagon Alley is going through a bar? Like, there are other ways to travel in the wizarding world and other ways to get to Diagon Alley that we later learn, but it seems like this is like a primary entrance here.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess it's an inn as well, we later learn. Mm-hmm. So like a tavern, I guess, kind of.
I don't think there's a significance to it. They talk about how it's just like just a dingy bar.
Yeah.
So if any muggles were to come in, they wouldn't think, oh, well, hang out in that courtyard.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. They do run into Professor Quirrell in the Leaky Cauldron, who is a important character.
Yeah.
He's going to be one of Harry's professors, so obviously he's very important.
He's a Defense Against the Dark Arts professor.
And to kind of get into the etymology of Quirrell, Galadriel in the Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter, again, gives a bit of an analysis. She says that the name probably comes from queer, which I don't know if I particularly agree with that, especially because queer is kind of a charged term now.
I don't think it was at the time. I don't know.
Yes, it was. But queer has for centuries been used as kind of code for gay, and usually in a derogatory way. And I don't know if I really agree that Curl is being quoted as gay, and I don't know. And of course it still means odd, so perhaps there, but she also adds squirrely, which I think is a cool,
squirrel definitely.
Yeah, I think that
works well.
It gets that Quirrell's vibe for sure. I also want to add Quiver in there, which he might say in the first movie, but I think Quiver for sure is an influence on that name too. And again, kind of getting at that body language of the character.
Yes, he's very jittery. Hagrid tells Harry that he used to be like a normal professor, but he took a year off to go like spend a year in
Albania, like, I think.
I don't think he says Albania specifically, but they say he ran into vampires and just a bunch of dark,
bad, scary
creatures
stuff
that kind of scared him.
Yeah. So, and he came back like this, and they're like, you're fine, you can teach.
Yeah. Yeah, he's afraid of students, afraid of what he's teaching. So he's in a perfect situation, really.
And again, to kind of break down some of the words in this chapter, Diagon Alley is a location in these books. And to talk about it seriously, in the Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter, again, Gladriel writes that it's interesting that Diagon Alley is a parallel world that intersects the Muggle world diagonally. But to add a personal anecdote there, it is only very recently that I realized Diagon Alley is diagonally. Just that never came together for me, and it just blew my mind when I realized it. I don't know what I was doing for so long that I just never put that together. But I'm like, wow, Diagon, that's such a cool word. And I think that was part of my sister's live journal username for a while. But it never came together for me until recently.
Yeah, I think I figured that out kind of the first movie.
Okay. Which you saw when you were like 8.
Yeah, about.
All right.
Sorry.
So they go into Diagon Alley, and it's this huge, impressive place. And Harry is, his head is just like rocking back and forth, trying to take everything in. And Hagrid is parting the crowds like Moses parting the Red Sea, because he's just so big, which would be useful in an area like this. Like, I'm thinking about like Disney World, and everybody just gets out of your way because Hagrid's coming through.
I remember in high school going through the hallways, there would be one kid like hanging onto someone else's backpack, just like forcing their way through.
This happened in high school?
Yeah.
That seems cruel.
No, I mean, he wasn't just like being pushed along, but like they were like working together to make their way through. It was like every day I would see these kids.
Yeah, it's also because the layout of our high school sucked so much, because there was like one staircase that everybody used.
Yeah.
And it was just awful trying to get up. Harry glances at his school shopping list before, or kind of as they're going into Diagon Alley. I don't remember when exactly, but one of the books listed on there is A History of Magic by Bathilda Bagshot, which normally I wouldn't pull out, but it was just recently announced that they're going to be putting out, kind of like how they did it for Quidditch Through the Ages and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. They're going to be putting out A History of Magic.
I don't think they came out with Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Yeah.
Oh, they did? I thought that was one of the ones they just announced.
No.
Okay, what are the ones we have? We've got...
We have Quidditch Through the Ages, Beedle the Bard, and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Okay. I definitely haven't read one of those.
Yeah, we'll read them, maybe, when we finish the series in, like, 5 years. But yeah, they just recently announced that. Not much is known about it. I don't think Rowling is writing them, which is cause for concern after what happened with Cursed Child, which I also have not read yet, so don't email us spoilers about Cursed Child. But yeah, we'll see what happens with those. I just thought I'd mention that because it was in the news in this past week. So they're working their way through Diagon Alley. We do get the drop of the Nimbus 2000. Hagrid and Harry walk by a broom shop, and they see a bunch of kids glaring through the window and be like, oh my god, it's the Nimbus 2000, which is a broomstick. One thing that has kind of nagged at me ever since I learned that the Harry Potter series takes place in the 90s is, why is it called the Nimbus 2000?
I don't know, just Nimbus and cool big number. I don't know.
Because it made sense when the movie came out, which was 2001. It's like, oh, okay, you know, this is like a big new thing. We're in the 2000s, the new millennium. So maybe this was like looking forward to it. Like, oh my God, this broom is so far ahead of its time that it's the Nimbus 2000. But then we learn later on that like some of the other brooms are like a clean sweep 7.
Yeah, maybe they've just made this so many times. And
yeah, maybe there's so been 2,000 Nimbuses before this. Yeah, I don't know.
Because what's the next one? Isn't it just like...
Nimbus 2001.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is just like, they've tried the Nimbus a whole 2,000 times, and this is the best one.
Yeah, so we do get introduced to that, but the Nimbus 2000 will show up again. So Harry and Hagrid make their way to Gringotts, which again is the Wizarding Bank, and they give Harry's key, and Hagrid also mentions that he's on Hogwarts business, so they're going to have to make another stop. They get into a little cart to ride to the vaults, and Hagrid has some trouble on it.
Yeah, he feels a little queasy. Or he first tells Harry that he's feeling queasy when Harry asks...
Yeah, I loved this.
So Harry asks what the difference is between stalagmites and stalactites, and Hagrid's response is, stalagmites got an M in it.
And then he's just like, don't talk to me. I need to focus here and keep my eyes closed and not throw up.
Yeah, and I was reading that on my phone, and it cut off halfway through the line where he was saying, and don't ask questions right now. But it ended at don't ask questions.
And you got like a flashback to Vernon and Petunia. I think it was Petunia that said that.
Probably both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But to clarify for our listeners, stalactites are the ones that hang from the ceilings.
Okay. I didn't even care enough to Google that.
They hang tight. Stalactites. That's how you remember it.
Not like mounds, stalagmites.
Oh, I guess you could do it that way too. All right. It's a little science knowledge for you. So as we're kind of diving into Gringotts, I think we need to talk about wizarding currency. Hagrid explains to Harry that it's 17 silver sickles to a galleon and 29 nuts to a sickle, and then says, it's easy enough.
How can you understand that and not understand, oh, there's 100 cents in a dollar and then everything else has numbers on it?
That uses sane numbers. Like, okay, 17 silver sickles to a gallon. So if I have three galleons, how many sickles do I have? You have to do 3 times 17, which... What? Who invented this system?
Well, J.K. Rowling does mention later on that she is very terrible at math.
Yeah, which then why would she invent this system? Maybe it was like an in-joke to herself that like this is how weird the wizards are, that they have this strange system, and they're like, oh, it's easy. You know, you can figure it out.
Yeah, like, I mean, I guess if you grow up with that system, maybe.
I don't know. And also because these wizards, as far as we know, don't have any, like, math classes. It's just absolutely bizarre. And this made me want to bring up one of my favorite wizard rock songs, which is The Economics of the Wizarding World Don't Make Sense by Harry and the Potters. It's not strictly related to kind of the wizarding currency. It's more about just the weird values that are assigned to items and how it really just does not shake out if you really think about it and look at it, which again is a testament to just how bad J.K. Rowling is at math.
Yeah, we later learn that unicorn hair is worth 10 galleons apiece, much later. But then Harry buys his wand for 7 galleons. It doesn't have a unicorn hair in it.
Yes, but I don't imagine that like wands are that much more expensive depending on the materials. And like phoenix tail feathers must be expensive too, you know? So it's just, it really doesn't work out. So I really recommend listening to that Harry and the Potter song.
Yeah, it's really good.
It is really good. So they get to Harry's vault and we learn that Harry is rolling in it. He has piles of money.
And they just stick like a good amount into a bag. I'm not sure how big the bag is, but he's like, oh yeah, that'll keep you for a few semesters.
Yeah. I do want to give a little background on that though, because Hagrid just says like, oh, you know, your parents left it for you, and Lily and James were killed at 21, so they did not really have time to be making tons of money in their careers because you graduate Hogwarts at 17. But Harry's grandfather, so James's father, created Sleek Easy's hair potion, which is, I guess, kind of like a hair gel, which I thought was a little ironic considering that both Harry and James are constantly mentioned to have super messy hair.
Yeah.
So either it was invented out of necessity because the family just has such crazy hair, or James and Harry just do not use the products, the family product.
I mean, Harry definitely does.
Yeah, Harry, of course, but James is, he probably just thinks it makes him look cool to have his hair like that. I think they do mention that later on in Order of the Phoenix, that he would mess up his hair so it looked like he just got off of a broomstick. Oh, James. We'll learn more about James as the series goes on.
So they pick up Harry's money and head to Vault 713, where Dumbledore's package is. And
his package.
This is a kid's show.
Okay.
They pick up the package and Griphook tells Harry that
only goblins
can open this door. So like he drags his finger down like the center of the door and it like melts away. But he said if anyone other than a goblin tried that, they would get sucked in.
And Harry's like, oh, how often do you check to see if somebody's in there?
10 years. And he's just like so happy with that.
The goblins are a little messed up. They're a little freaky.
Well, at the entrance, it basically says you'll die in here. There's like a there's a well-written poem saying, don't steal from us or you'll die in here. Yeah. We won't even have to kill you.
And Hagrid suggests that there's a dragon in there. And he mentions that he always wants wanted a dragon. So that's going to become important later on. But yeah, the Gringotts is scary.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a cruel punishment, too. A cruel but smart punishment, too. That, like, hey, you wanted this treasure so bad, so...
You can have it for the rest of your life.
So they leave Gringotts and go to do the rest of their school supply shopping, which is one of the most thrilling things in the world, even when it's not magical items. But Harry just seems to be having the time of his life checking out all this stuff. But he does start to feel bad because he realizes that he is totally out of his element going into the wizarding world, which happens majorly in Madame Malkin's robe shop, where he runs into a pale-faced boy. We later learn that this is Draco Malfoy, and I think it's just going to be easier for our conversation to refer to him as Draco Malfoy.
But that spoils the surprise.
To get into kind of the origins of Madame Malkin's, isn't the word origins, I don't know what to call this. Actually, in the Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter, she calls it Rowlinguistics, which I really like, so I might co-opt that term in the future. According to the Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter, Malkin is slang for a poorly dressed woman or dust rags, which is a little ironic there. It can also mean a cat or a rabbit. And that there is also a scholar in Greek mythology called Professor Irid Malkin. All of those could be possible origins of Madame Malkin's, but there is Madame Malkin's.
Yeah.
Some little trivia for you. But so we run into Draco, who is a pompous little brat. And I think that Rowling is so gifted in the way that she makes her characters speak, especially with their first introduction in the books. So this happens. I really want to talk about it when we meet Hermione in a later chapter, but because we're keeping to chapter 5 here. Draco, I'm going to read directly. He says this. Father says it's a crime if I'm not picked to play for my house. And I must say, I agree. This kid is 11 years old, and he just talks like, my first thought was The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, the book. It's about the Holocaust, but the main character and kind of narrator, it's written in the voice of like a rich, spoiled kid who eventually like meets some concentration camp detainees. I don't know how to phrase that in
prisoners,
yeah, in a conscious way. But yeah, just like the voice of that, very like uppity and like so clearly rich. I must say, I agree. Like, shut up, Draco.
And before that, he's like, oh, I know we're not allowed to have rooms our first year, but I'm gonna bully my dad into buying me one and then sneak it in.
He's horrible. Like, if this kid wasn't rich, he would get the crap kicked out of him all the time. Well, maybe also because he's rich, but he gets himself defenders
for that reason. Right away.
Yeah. And he's such a little nerd, too, that he's like, well, daddy says this. I'll bully daddy into it. Like, ugh. He's the worst.
But also he said his mom was looking at wands.
Right. Yeah, that's not too surprising because, like, yes, the wand chooses the wizard and everything, but we see, I don't know if it's really established in the books, but we see in the movies that there are some very intricate looking wands. I don't know if that's a kind of thing you can add. You know, like Lucius has that dope cane with his wand on.
Yeah, so, but I think that was just like an attachment.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she's like looking at wand accessories. I don't know. Maybe. Or just saying like, I want a powerful wand for my son. And Ollivander being like, that's not how this works. Yeah, and she's going to be like, find me a powerful one. And actually thinking about in the movies, Draco's wand is pretty ordinary looking.
Yeah. But speaking of wands, Ollivander goes into detail about Harry's parents' wands. Mm-hmm. And he specifically mentions that Harry's father's wand is good for transfiguration.
Yeah. And Lily's is good for charms.
Oh, I don't remember him saying it was good for charms.
Yep.
Because I was going to say it was weird that he specified what that wand was good for and not what the other wands he described were for.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, okay, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean maybe it's that like certain wands are just like jack of all trades wands and other ones are like, you know, this one is kind of more suited to transfiguration. There's this whole thing about like the particular materials of wands and like what the wand cores go into. If you do the, well, I don't know if it's there anymore because Pottermore got gutted, kind of, but there is like a get your wand quiz in Pottermore and it gives you like all these things about like all the woods.
Oh, I'm
that
sure
can
that's
be going.
Still there.
It's crazy. There's a whole lot of detail about it. So I don't know, maybe one of those like particular parts of the wand makes it suited for transfiguration. Yeah, we also get kind of like a montage when Harry is trying out all the wands. We don't get like, oh, well, this one's good for, you know, potions and, well, you don't really use your wand with potions, but this one's good for potions and this one's good for transfigure. It's just like, oh, Harry tried this one, tried a wand and a wand and it just took forever.
Yeah, I doubt he would say like, oh, this wand is good for this thing specifically, especially when he's saying, if this wand isn't good for you, it's not going to work that well. So it's just whatever the wand happens to be good with is the one you're stuck with. But we don't find out what Harry's wand is good for.
Yeah, I just kind of got the sense that it was a jack of all trades sort of thing.
Well, I can't imagine, like, sure, the wand was, Lily's wand was good for charms, but it's not like it would be bad at the other thing.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to research that a little bit. But back to Madame Malkin's, I want to talk a little bit more about Harry's interaction with Draco. They talk about Hagrid because Draco sees that Harry is with Hagrid and he's like, why are you with this guy? And Harry's like, my parents are dead. So. And Draco says of Hagrid, I heard he's sort of a savage, lives in a hut on the school grounds, and every now and then he gets drunk, tries to do magic, and ends up setting fire to his bed. Harry replies, I think he's brilliant. I thought that was adorable.
Yeah, I love that he defends him.
Yes.
And like we see in the reading that Harry's already getting annoyed by this boy.
Yes. Yeah. And part of it is he's getting annoyed because he's like, I don't know what any of this stuff is. You know, I feel so out of my element. But Harry definitely does get the this kid is a jerk vibe from him.
Yeah. And he's immediately reminded of Dudley.
Yeah. But I think it says a lot about Harry's character that he does stand up for Hagrid in this moment. And like even to this kid that has such an edge on him. That he's clearly from money. He has his parents. He's from the wizarding world. And Harry is still brave enough to stick up for Hagrid. And I think it says a lot about the relationship between Harry and Hagrid again, that they're so close. Harry's known him for a couple hours at this point, and he's still saying, like, I think that Hagrid's brilliant. It was so sweet. I thought that was an adorable little interaction.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, then we do get kind of that racism and classism conflict that becomes so important in the Harry Potter books. Draco asks Harry what's his surname, and Harry doesn't get a chance to reply because Draco's whisked away. Or Harry is finished. I don't remember which one, but
Harry is finished. Yeah.
Okay. Draco asks, what's your surname anyway, as part of this conversation about like, oh, you know, I don't believe that Muggleborns should be allowed into...
I don't think he says Muggleborns.
He doesn't use that term specifically, but he's saying, like, people that don't come from wizarding families.
Yeah, this was just, like, the first taste. He doesn't give too many details, but he's like, oh, both of your parents were wizards? That's good.
Yeah.
I don't think the other sort.
Yeah. And it kind of reminded me of that kind of old money thing. Because, you know, it's hard to draw that parallel, because it's not an explicit racism where it's based on, like, a physical attribute that you can see. Of course, they try to turn it into a physical attribute with the muggle-born thing, as in, like, oh, you've got muggle blood in you.
Yeah.
So, it, like, it's obviously a parallel for these things. It's obviously a parallel for racism and, to some extent, classism, because the old wizarding families have money, for the most part, with one notable exception. Yeah, I think it's just kind of all of these sort of social isms wrapped into one, mm-hmm. that we're kind of hit with here. And it's, I'm not going to say that it's the most socially conscious job that Rowling does with it, but I think that it is a really interesting conflict that she builds into the wizarding world.
Yeah. And then if you look at the casting for
the
movie, there's a bit of an issue there.
Yes. But. Yeah. We should probably do an episode on the movies.
We'll do it after we're done.
We'll do an episode on all seven movies at once. It'll be like 8 hours long.
All right. For starters, it's 8 movies.
Oh, God. Jesus.
It's okay. You hate part 2.
I don't hate it. It's just not very good.
But yeah, we'll try not to talk too much about the movies until we get to that final episode.
So also a part of the discussion that Harry and Draco have in Madame Alkins is Draco mentions the Hogwarts houses and kind of says, like, well, I'm going to be in Slytherin. Like, my whole family has been Slytherin. Like, imagine being in Hufflepuff. And Harry later asks Hagrid about the houses and Hufflepuff in general. Hagrid briefly explains and then says, everyone says Hufflepuffs are a lot of duffers. And Harry says, I bet I'm in Hufflepuff. Oh, that just made me laugh a lot. But actually, I misspoke in a previous episode. I said that we don't know what house Hagrid was in. We never learn it in the books, but in an interview, J.K. Rowling states that Hagrid was in Gryffindor.
All right, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that fits the character and everything. There was this really long Tumblr post that I read recently about like making the case that Hagrid is in Slytherin. I don't know, they did a pretty good job of arguing it. But yeah, apparently officially Hagrid is in Gryffindor, if you count J.K. Rowling interviews as official and canonical.
Okay, I don't know if I would count most of her tweets.
Yeah. But Hagrid also stops Harry from buying a solid gold cauldron.
Which I think is good. I think it's good both because that would have been ridiculous, but I think Harry would have regretted that very quickly.
Yeah, imagine rolling up into potions on the first day and being like, here's my solid gold cauldron. And like not even considering who his potions professor ultimately turns out to be. But
yeah, he
like,
would have been
just in any classroom setting being like, oh, you were supposed to get this one, but I got a solid gold one. But I think it says a lot about a child who has never had money and is suddenly like set free to go shopping.
Yeah, there's a reason that people who win the lottery end up in debt.
Yes. Hagrid says that he's got to get Harry a birthday present, which is adorable. Mm-hmm. And Harry's like, oh, you don't have to. And Hagrid's like, heck yes, I do. And it's cute.
Hagrid, well, I think it was nice. He says, like, I know I don't, but
yeah,
I want to.
Yeah. I love Hagrid so much. but Hagrid decides to buy Harry an animal, which is completely in character. and he kind of goes through the options. They're allowed to bring a cat, a toad, or an owl. And Hagrid says, like, well, cats make me sneeze, so that's out. Because obviously Hagrid is buying this animal knowing he's going to have a lot of contact with it. and then he says that he won't get Harry a toad because they went out of fashion years ago and Harry would be laughed at, which I thought was real funny considering a character we later learn has a toad.
Yes.
So ultimately, Hagrid ends up buying Harry an owl.
Nice white snowy owl.
Yep. We don't get a name yet in this chapter, which I thought was surprising. But
they go into like how he decides to name it.
Yeah, in the next chapter. We'll get to that next episode. But so then we end up in the wand shop to get the wand.
Ollivander's.
Yes. I don't have a ton to say about the wand picking process. It's just kind of like Ollivander gives Harry a wand and it doesn't work. And then they go through a bunch of them.
Well, I'm not sure if it was the case for every wand Harry tried, but for the first couple wands that are specifically mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It says like Harry picks it up and it's immediately grabbed out of his hand by Ollivander instead of him like trying it out.
Yeah, as opposed to in the movies where he like shatters a flower vase and stuff, which I understand it's more visually exciting to have that. But
yeah, and that's kind of what they did. We went to
The Wizarding World of Harry Potter in Florida,
and we actually got chosen, the two of us, during the Ollivander.
They did us both. That
How
was
dare
weird.
You forget?
I always thought that I had been to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter before. This was Joe's first time, but I thought that they gave you a wand for free when you got picked at Ollivander's. I learned that that was not the case. Yeah, they like step you aside and they're like, "Do you want to buy these wands for $45 but yeah, we were picked, and they do a little show where like you wave the wand and then a thing explodes and stuff happens.
Yeah, I thought it was really cute.
It was cute. It's a good
and there was like
show.
A whole he had a whole background for every wand that he picked up.
Yes, it's a great show and everything. I'm not knocking on it, but I thought they gave you a free wand. Considering how much they pick and how many of those shows that they do a day,
they do one every 10 minutes. Imagine like, oh, here's a free $50 wand every 10 minutes.
Yeah,
that's going to be an issue.
Really expensive, though.
Yes.
But the kind of only thing that I really noted about the Ollivander interaction is that Ollivander gives Harry the wand that ends up working for him and says, you know, oh, this has the same phoenix tail feather as the one that Voldemort has. And then he says, "He who must not be named did great things. Terrible, yes, but great." I saw this as a bit of a parallel to an ongoing conversation that we've had about morality in this series, particularly that quote in the first chapter where Dumbledore says, like, Voldemort had powers that I'll never have. And McGonagall says, like, only because you're too noble to use them. And now Ollivander is saying, you know, Voldemort did great things. They were terrible, but, you know, you have to respect the power and the magic behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. This will be the third time we're bringing it.
Yeah, I think so. Time in 5 episodes.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll bring it up a couple more times.
Well, that conflict between good and evil, of course, is at the core of this series. And this series gets knocked a lot for having a very dichotomous relationship between good and evil, that there's a clear good and a clear evil. And I'm not sure I always agree with that. I think that there is some nuance that Rowling writes in here.
Yeah, there are definitely gray areas throughout the series, but there is definitely a clear villain with just clearly evil
intentions and everything. And I understand that, and to some extent the criticism I agree with, but I like picking out these quotes here because I think it's building a very interesting conversation here about power and choices and sort of nature, in a way, as in human nature, as in it's the choices that you make and the things that you do that determine whether you're a bad person or not. It's not really, you know, you're born this way.
Mm-hmm.
Except it, I guess we'll get to it. It would be a big spoiler if I continued that statement, but
Ollivander also says, if I had known what he was going to do with it, and then he like kind of trails off before explicitly saying, oh, I wouldn't have given this like 11-year-old wand.
Yeah,
but like at 11, how much can you really?
I mean, we later learn that there were warning signs. But so that's kind of the Ollivander interaction. I don't have too much to say about that, to be honest. It's just like it's one of those big scenes that people really know from the Harry Potter series that I don't think I have anything interesting to add to the conversation around it.
Yeah, just it's important. That's all that really matters.
Yeah, Harry gets the wand that matches Voldemort's. Blah, blah, blah.
And I really love phoenixes.
Do you?
Yeah.
Why?
They're really cool.
Okay.
They'd be very an owl's convenient, but
imagine if Harry was like, okay, I can get an owl or I can bring a pet phoenix. I feel like that's a parallel to the gold cauldron thing.
But they can revive you. They basically live forever, even though they die.
Yeah.
Forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're just really. Yeah. Really good to have.
Yeah. And then I think that the chapter ends on a just incredibly sweet moment. There's this great quote about Hagrid. Behind the wild beard and eyebrows, he wore a very kind smile. Oh. I just melted into myself at that. And then Hagrid has this incredible quote that he delivers to Harry, which I'm going to pull up so I can read it and not butcher it. But Harry is kind of mentioning there's so much that I don't know about this world. You know, how am I going to fit in Hogwarts? How am I going to be in classes with people like Draco who have lived and grown up in this world? I'm so far behind. Mm-hmm. And Hagrid says to him, "Don't you worry, Harry. You'll learn fast enough. Everyone starts at the beginning at Hogwarts. You'll be just fine. Just be yourself. I know it's hard. You've been singled out, and that's always hard. But you'll have a great time at Hogwarts. I did. Still do, as a matter of fact."
Yeah, he's so sweet. And even, like, I was expelled from here, but I had a great time.
That's the thing. He really, and I think that it gets at sort of being an outsider as well. That part of, I think, what brings Harry and Hagrid together at times is that Hagrid, of course, was always an outsider because he's half giant. And now he, you know, he's, of course, still dealing with that, but he was also expelled. He's seen as less intelligent than everyone else. And he still loves his life at Hogwarts. And he goes at it with an attitude where he's accepted and really enjoy his time. And Harry, of course, is coming at this as an outsider because he was raised by Muggles. And he's famous for something that he really didn't even do or
at the very least doesn't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's definitely coming into this battling against that, you know, again, as an outsider. And I love that they're kind of relating to each other at that. And I felt that that was such a powerful quote by Hagrid and that it could be applied across, you know, real life situations too, you know, kids going into a school and feeling like an outsider and just, you know, saying like, just be yourself and, you know, it's going to be what you make of it. So if you try hard and work hard and stay true to yourself that, you know, things will work out for you.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great note to end the chapter on, especially because we've had some bummer endings so far.
I mean, unfortunately it doesn't end right there. He has to go back to...
No, yeah, he does have to go back to the Dursleys. Let me live in my fantasy world where everything is beautiful and nothing hurts.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, we are reading the Harry Potter series, so. But that's all I got for the chapter, unless we missed anything.
Probably not.
All right, so moving along, hoping we didn't miss anything. We are going to do our Spell of the Week segment.
Which you decided on a spell?
Yes, I decided on a spell. This was very hard because there are no spells used in this chapter. Last week we did Incendio because Hagrid lights a fire, even though he doesn't say the words Incendio. So for this one, I just picked Ingorgio Scholus because we've been playing Lego Harry Potter because the collection is on sale on the PlayStation Network right now. Ingorgio Scholus is a hex that makes somebody's head really big. It's funny.
It's really entertaining. Yes.
Yeah, I don't think I need to explain where the words come from. Engorge, of course, means to fill something to excess. And
EO just makes it a spell.
Yes. And Scholus, again, US makes it a spell. So, yeah, it's real funny if you use it in the Harry Potter Lego games.
Apparently they are used in...
Yes, Half-Blood Prince. So we'll see how that pans out in like 10 years.
Yeah.
When we get to Half-Blood Prince. I like that we've gone from like, oh, it'll be like 5 years and then 10 years.
Well,
we should really calculate it out. Like, there are this many chapters and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it's going to take less than a year if we do one every week to get through the first book.
Oh, okay. Well, there are only 17 chapters in the first book.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. So, it'll take less than a year. A week has 52, a year has 52 weeks.
Yeah, the books do definitely get longer.
Yes, and we'll have more educated Spell of the Week segments once there are some actual spells being used. But yeah, our Spell of the Week is Ingorgio Scholus. So with our chapter discussion done, we are going to move into emails. You can send us an email to owlpost@podtrificustotalis. Joe, give him some ideas on what to email us for as I pull it up.
I don't know. What would you email us about?
Corrections. Because dumb.
Yeah, feel free to email us corrections, some advice. I don't know.
Advice.
give us just life advice in general for some reason. What would you like to hear us focus on in future chapters?
Yep, you can stop filling for time. I pulled up the email.
Well, I mean, you can edit, so
yeah, all right.
I didn't need
okay,
to fill
listen.
Anything. This isn't live.
Yeah, so Joe gave you some ideas, but this email comes in from Hannah. Hannah is one of my new friends from the Lady Pod Squad, which is a group of female podcasters. Her podcast is called Film Roast, where they talk about movies and roast them. The title is also a play on words with coffee, so it's basically just, you know, two ladies talking about movies over coffee. It's pretty entertaining. I've started listening to it. But Hannah writes, "Hey guys, awesome episode I just listened to. Harry, You're a Wizard just doesn't have the same ring to it as You're a Wizard, Harry."
I think it's true.
Yeah.
There's a reason they went with that in the movies.
Yes. And then she writes, "I've got an HP related question for you if you take owls." That is, we do. In Harry Potter and the Philosopher's/Sorcerer's Stone, which first year do you most identify with and why? Keep up the great work, Hannah from Film Roast. I think we can get into this without doing too many spoilers.
Which student?
Yeah, which first year student in Philosopher's Stone. So I guess for the first years in Philosopher's Stone, there's another character that I would like to mention, but they're not in Hogwarts yet. For me, I always had an attachment to Hermione, especially in the books. The movies do a lot of rewriting of characters, but Hermione in the books is kind of abrasive. She's not super nice or super easy to get along with. She is very much a know-it-all. She rubs people the wrong way, but there's something very lovable about how just uppity she is. So I connected with that as a child, that like I was always told, you know, like, oh, you're so smart and everything, and I did well in school, and I always want to like prove to people that like, hey, I'm really smart. And I think Hermione has that to some extent, and you know, not to make myself sound horrible in that description, but I think that Hermione's also doing that to cover up her insecurity about being Muggle-born. That she's like, well, you know, they won't suspect that I'm Muggle-born. They won't suspect that I'm not like them if I show them how smart I am. Mm-hmm. And so using that to kind of cover up your own insecurities. And I also related to Ron for being poor, because I grew up pretty poor, and so a lot of the things about, you know, like wearing hand-me-downs and kind of feeling uncomfortable in certain social situations just because you don't have money. So there's a later scene on the Hogwarts Express where Harry, you know, buys a bunch of candy and Ron's like, oh, I have a sandwich from home. And I just remember, you know, like everybody like buying lunch in elementary school and getting like packs of Gushers and fruit roll ups. And I would always have a packed lunch because, you know, it was a lot more affordable to pack lunch until we got free or reduced lunch. Mm-hmm. Thanks, socialism. So definitely Hermione and probably to a lesser extent, Ron.
I don't know. I guess when I was little, I identified with Neville. I was pretty fat at the time. Yeah, and I had a frog, not a toad.
Okay.
I think his name was Tom, actually.
Okay.
That's all I got. I don't know.
Okay. Well, you also had the glow up, like Matthew Lewis? I think that's who played Neville.
What do you mean?
Have you seen pictures of him, like, today?
Oh, yeah, he's
yeah,
hot.
Yeah, he's an extremely good-looking man who started out as, like, a pudgy...
Yeah, but he worked out into that point. I just kind of, like, outgrew.
You grew, yeah.
I got really tall and couldn't put on the weight fast enough to keep it on.
Yeah, at the time.
At the time. It's catching up to
me. All right. So those are our emails. Again, you can send us an email to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. We would really appreciate it. We are available on all of the podcast services, iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, whatever the heck you're on. We should be on as well, and if we're not, let us know and we'll get up there. We are also on YouTube now. I put the episodes up on YouTube, so you can also follow us on there if you prefer to listen to podcasts on YouTube, which, why would you do that to yourself, really? But... If you like that, that is there for you. And then finally, you can follow us on social media. We are on Twitter at Podtrificus. We're on Facebook. You can just search Podtrificus Totalis. We are on Tumblr, podtrificustotalis.tumblr.com. And you can find links to all of this on our website, podtrificustotalis.com, where there are detailed show notes, and that's kind of it. It's a good directory for our episodes and, you know, yeah, accessing our episodes. So please, you know, follow us. We do have a bunch of new subscribers right now, which is very exciting. I'm so happy everybody's along with us. So write into us about, you know, your thoughts on the podcast and the Harry Potter series. You know, contact us. We love to talk to people about Harry Potter.
Yeah, and on our website, we've got, like, references to, or links to everything we've referenced.
Yeah, yeah, which might be helpful for some people, especially with, like, the Scooby-Doo reference that we made last time. I did find a picture of that particular phenomenon in Scooby-Doo, so if you were scratching your head at that, there is a link to help you out with that. And one thing that you can do that does help us is leaving us a review on iTunes or anything that can kind of accept reviews. But iTunes does rank podcasts higher if they have reviews. So, you know, if you have a chance, please do leave us a review. And you can join us next time for Chapter 6.
The Journey from Platform 9 3/4.